what people are talking about.
Let me hit you with some knowledge.
This is TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Italy has fascinating culture, beautiful scenery, amazing history, and warm, friendly people. Nobody knows Italy better than the host of How to Tour Italy. Here's Anthony Capozzoli on TalkZone.com.
Hi, this is Anthony Capozzoli with the How to Tour Italy radio show, and we have a really, really cool segment for you today. And we're going to be covering a few different topics, but the best part about this is it's with one true master, really, a master of many, many hats. And I'm sitting here with Pamela Sheldon-Johns, and we're going to start out talking. The first phase of the conversation is her wonderful experience as a cookbook author, and not only a cookbook author, but a cookbook author that you can find at your favorite cooking stores like Williams-Sonoma. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So welcome to the show, Pamela.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm going to tell right away, I'm going to tell a story on you.
Please.
Yeah, I walked you up to see the books that I've done, and they're all stacked up, and you're like, oh, I have this book. Oh, I have this one, too.
I know. I feel terrible about it, and it's true. I have at least half of the books that you've written. And I feel bad for not having all of the books that you've written.
It's all right. It's not as bad as the lady who came to stay with me and said, oh, I have this book. And when I pulled it down and looked at it with her, she said, except that mine's signed by the author. No, you think that's funny?
Yeah,
that is not funny.
Well, I have actually a story back. I have your Granita cookbook, and it's one of my all-time favorites. I make the Granitas, or rather the gelato cookbook. It's actually called, but you have the Granita recipes in there and the gelato recipes. My Aunt Judy, who owns a cooking store, or used to own a cooking store in like a northern suburb of Chicago, bought me that cookbook because she said it was her absolute favorite. So,
sweet.
And it's delicious. So I'm actually, Aunt Judy, you're going to be jealous of me because I'm sitting here with the author herself.
Hi,
and
Judy.
That's right. I don't even need a signed copy. I'm having some of her delectable, in fact, we're having Cafe Freddo right now, but Cafe Latte Freddo, I would say. But very good stuff. So let's talk a bit about some of the cookbooks and your inspiration for the cookbooks and where we can find them.
Okay. Well, I have been working on the cookbooks since the early 90s, and originally, I'm from California, and just like you, made a lot of trips over to Italy over the years and started gathering up information and working on things, and finally kind of defined my interest in the traditional foods of the different regions and the artisans who make them. And so a lot of the books that you look at are single subject books. For example, the one that you're looking at right now, prosciutto, pancetta, and salami, is, well, sort of a triple subject in a way, but it's
right.
About cured meats. And it also is wonderful to work on these kind of things because I get to go around and find out, you know, prosciutto's different in every region. In the United States, we're used to getting only two kinds of prosciutto, the San Daniele and the prosciutto of Parma, because those are the only ones the USDA will let in. The aged meats, aged raw meats like prosciutto and salami, in order to pass through the customs of the United States, have to age at least 400 days. Well, the only cured meat that can actually survive 400 days of aging would be a prosciutto. And it's perfect, really, because that's how long, you know, they age for a year or more.
Right.
But only a few of the plants who actually make prosciutto get certified by the USDA to bring over into the United States. So you come to Tuscany and you have prosciutto here. It's something way different than you would get in the States.
It is, and it's not only is it different. I mean, the layers of flavor that you have here, not only with the prosciutto but with the cured meats, it's exceptional. And that's one of my favorite things here is discovering all of the great food. And that's why your cookbooks are so great, is because you've done that for us.
I've tasted everything. I've done the hard stuff for you.
That's right. And the recipes are fun. I mean, I like to cook. I wouldn't consider myself a good cook, but your recipes are fun to make and fun to work with. So,
well, you know, my whole point is you don't need to spend a lot of time cooking, but you do need good ingredients.
Yes.
And if you can just get I remember when I first started coming over to Italy in the 80s, I'd bring a suitcase with me and bring back everything. But now, you know, you've got it all pretty much over there. You've got access to so many wonderful ingredients that we didn't used to have.
That's true.
So there's no excuse. You really should be able to get some good stuff and make make really delicious meals.
I agree. And one of the things I tell people, one of my tips, is, at least in the States, is go to the farmer's markets, buy the vegetables fresh, right from the people that make
seasonal.
Those vegetables and seasonal.
Yeah.
And then maybe drive the extra 15, 20 minutes wherever you live and buy the best mozzarella you can find and the best ingredients, as you say. It'll pay dividends, because that's what I like to do, is use really good ingredients, put them together, and that's my claim to fame, but I didn't do any of the work. I just sliced up the tomatoes and the mozzarella, and there you have it.
Oh, we made, the other night we took a burrata, which is the other southern Italian type of mozzarella. It's not a mozzarella at all, but it's got the cream inside.
It's delicious.
And sliced that up with some of the tomatoes from the garden. A little bit of our olive oil over it. Okay. Good night, Irene. Or buonanotte, Irena.
Buonanotte, Irena. So let's talk. I mean, you can find all of your books at Williams-Sonoma.
Well, some are out of print, actually. But still, I think on Amazon, you mm-hmm. can find vendors who have copies of them. I have yet to be without a book. I think there's always somebody that's still got one.
That's
hopefully.
Great.
Hopefully. Gelato's still in print. In fact, was just re-released last year on a soft cover.
I'm sorry to interrupt,
okay.
but from the Gelato cookbook, this is wonderful because you can actually make gelato at home, and these recipes are spectacular to do just that. And one of the questions I asked Pamela was, which gelato maker at home should I buy? And this is maybe a little bit of a tidbit here that you get on the How to Tour Italy show. And
well, you know, I mean, it should be just simple anyway. And the granita that you mentioned earlier is just the favorite one I think that you mentioned is the coffee.
Yes, indeed.
And you take a coffee and you put it on a cookie sheet, put that in the freezer, and every few minutes with a fork you scrape it up into crystals as it's freezing. And that couldn't be easier. You don't need any special equipment for that. But as far as making a gelato or an ice cream type dessert, you do need to have some equipment, and that would be something like the little Donvier mm-hmm. that doesn't require any electricity at all. It has a liner that goes into the freezer and is frozen until you're ready to make it. You bring it out, put your mixture in, and hand stir it. And it's perfect for gelato.
That's great.
But then, of course, you know, if you're like me and you make it every day, you have to have the kind that is got the built-in freezer mm-hmm. in it, and that you can just make continuous batches from. My husband's sitting here. What's your favorite gelato, dear?
Strawberry with a little banana.
Okay, and that...
Oh. Pistachio.
Okay, he's got more than one favorite. But both of those are made just with whole milk, 4% mm-hmm. milk, and the fruit, let's say strawberries in their season, a tiny bit of sugar maybe if they need it. And that goes right into the blender and then right into the ice cream maker.
Yeah.
We're talking about something that has 4% fat in it, not 11 or more like ice cream typically has, made with a custard, egg, yolks, cream, and all that.
Right.
And it's just so good. You really taste the fruit. It's delicious.
It is delicious. And another one of my favorite gelato is I love the chocolate with the hot peppers, the peperoncino here in Italy. And I get that every day from my favorite gelateria in Florence, Gelateria Neri, almost every day. And it's spectacular. People like hot peppers and ice. It's one of those things that you have to try. It's spectacular. So do you have a favorite from your gelato cookbook?
I think that probably the one I love to make the most is the pistachio, or as they say in Italian, pistacchio, because it's very, very simple. Again, I toast some pistachio. Then I put them into cold milk with a little sugar and heat it up, right? As the sugar dissolves, then I let that mixture cool off overnight. And as it stands, the pistachio flavor goes into the milk.
Yeah.
And this really illustrates one of my favorite cooking topics, and that is to think about where flavor comes from in food. A good example, just to branch away for a second from gelato, is to think about chicken stock. Chicken stock starts with cold water, chicken bones, carrot, celery, onion, a few herbs, and some things like that. You turn it on, and as it heats up, the flavor of those things goes into the water. But if you took the same pot of water, brought it to a boil, and dropped those ingredients in, the flavor would stay in those ingredients. So I'm thinking of the same thing when I make pistachio ice cream. I want the flavor in the milk. Because when you have pistachio ice cream here, gelato, it's not chunky at all. It's just the silky, creamy... They don't have Chunky Monkey here. Oh, maybe in Florence they do.
I haven't seen it yet.
But you know what? The flavor has to get from the pistachio into the milk. And the way that you do it is to start cold, put all the ingredients in, heat it up, and the flavor leaves that ingredient. And in the morning, when I strain that out to make the gelato, there's very little flavor left in the nut. It's in the milk.
Hmm. Well, that's fantastic to know. I hadn't thought of it, but that's spectacular. See, that's the kind of stuff here, that those are little kind of the tips and tricks that make it so the food so delicious from the top to the bottom of the boot.
A lot of people do those things naturally, but it's nice to know why it's happening and to kind of manipulate it a little bit.
Yeah. You wanna... That's good. And so when you read the cookbooks, all these tips, I mean, are obviously in here. And now we're talking about your pasta cookbook. And one of my favorite dishes, start to finish, is always I like the primi piatti, you know, in my Italian meals here, either antipasti or primi are usually my two favorites. If I have to pick only one, I'll probably always go with the primi, which is typically pasta here for those listening that haven't been here. And if you have, you know exactly what I'm saying.
And you're making them hungry.
And exactly. Yeah. I love my favorite, I think a handful of my favorite types of pasta in sauces. I love carbonara. I love cacio pepe. I love bucatini matriciana. Those would be kind of the main staples for me. And then I love the bolognese sauce are probably my tops. Now,
interesting that most of the things that you mentioned are central to southern dishes. Hmm. And made with pasta asciutta, dried pasta. And it's interesting to look at the regionality of pasta, and it was something that also drove me crazy when I was doing this book, because you could be in one region and ask for, have a let's say a ravioli with some filling in it, and it has a certain name, and the next night you go across the street, it happens to be a different region, you ask for it, and they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
We don't know what that is. And then you describe it, oh, but we call that...
Absolutely.
So then the recipe could change, the name could change. But in general, the difference between the North and the South is the wheat. The wheat that's grown in the South is a hard wheat with high protein in it that's strong enough to be shaped into dried pastas and dried. Hmm. Whereas the northern pasta, traditionally, before all this transportation was moving things around, was made with a soft wheat, and therefore almost always a fresh pasta, fresh egg pasta.
Really?
So the hard wheats, like a durum wheat that come from the south, created the tradition for making dried pastas like spaghetti and those kind of things. You were talking more about sauces, but it made me think about what we're talking here is the pasta itself.
Yeah, definitely.
And in fact, the first kind of industrial pastas came around the 1800s near Naples in Campania in a little town called Gragnano that was perfectly set up to dry pasta. They had a valley coming up from the water, and the water itself was good. The wheat with the high protein blended together to make the dough. They would extrude it through bronze dyes. Then the bronze dyes gave it a very nice texture on the outside. And then they would let it dry for 60, 70 hours under the hot blazing sun of the south with the breezes from the sea. That's why it was the perfect place to do it. When I was working on the book, I met a gentleman whose family were one of the first pasta producers in that area. And his job was to chase the goats away from the drying pasta on the street. He had racks all up and down the street. And so, you know, nowadays, dried pasta, we see these kind of industrial brands that are flash dried very quickly, not spending a long time drying, but there still are some artisanal producers who do let it dry for a long time. And it makes a difference because the flavor changes with heat. And the nutrition changes. So if you can get your hands on some of these artisanal pastas, it's really worth it.
See, that's wonderful to know. And one thing I always want to know is how do they make the little tortellini? It seems like a complicated pasta to make, and I know it's like
I'm going to show you. Come here. Let me just whip some.
Yeah, right. So what's the little trick for those?
Well, it's hard to explain without actually showing, but, you know, it's the tiniest little thing made with your thumb and your first finger, basically.
Sure.
And if I could describe it, it's taking the filling, which is classically a Modena, Bologna, and that area up there. Got meat in it, it's got some prosciutto, it's got parmigiano in it. Then a tiny bit of that filling put on a small square that's folded into a triangle and closed. And then you twist this around your finger.
Okay.
But the thing that I'm missing by not being able to show you this is this little kick that you give to that top point that makes it just kind of bend over and bow to you as you twist it around your finger. But the women up there, they're amazing. They do it so fast, and they do zillions of these teeny tiny little things. They're wonderful.
Yeah. And in Puglia, they're at the Arachetti, too. They kick those out so fast, you can't even hardly believe they're doing it.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting that you brought that up, because that is one of the few fresh pastas that you find in the South. Made with the durum flour, the semola flour.
Really?
And it's an orecchiette. It was a very chewy, dense kind of fresh pasta.
Yeah, and it's spectacular. And that's the other thing, too, everybody. Like, when you travel throughout Italy, that's why I always ask, whenever I'm eating in a new region or in a particular region, I always ask the server what they recommend and let them guide me through the meal. And I never try to always just go for my knee-jerk reaction with what I recognize. Because typically, if I recognize... eggplant parmesan in the north is probably something I shouldn't be eating. I should be trying something local
nowadays, I think the Italian cuisine is a little more international in that sense. But it is kind of funny, if you go, if they opened a restaurant around here with food from Sicily, the people around here would say, that's foreign food.
Exactly.
Because it's so different, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I did a segment, and I'm going to be doing a continued segment, and Pamela's going to be joining me on that, hopefully, for segments to come. But I call it, there is no such thing as Italian food. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, that things are foreign, even for regions as close as Tuscany to Umbria or Lazio, where, and even northern Tuscany to southern Tuscany, there's a substantial difference in what they're eating.
Absolutely. Down here, we have a pasta called Pici, P-I-C-I. That's a fresh pasta that's rolled, each strand rolled out by hand, kind of like a fat spaghetti.
Mm.
And it goes back to the times of the mezzadria and the sharecropping system, you could call it, when people didn't have a lot and they could make something with just a handful of flour and water.
Yeah.
Very regional. You shouldn't find it in Florence. It's not typical there, although some restaurants are now serving it. Pretty much from Cortona to Montalcino, south in Tuscany where we are here.
Yeah. And by the way, this region of Tuscany, Val d'Orcia, it's amazing, actually. And I was hoping maybe we have one more other books to talk about, but two very cool things here. Another book is called Italian and then Food Artisans, Traditions and Recipes by
it
Pamela
as
well.
It is about Italian food. I just have to say it.
And it's a great book, a wonderful collection, and another book. And you can find these, again, go to Amazon, Williams-Sonoma. And then, Pamela, you're going to be in the U.S. doing a book tour.
I am going to be on the East Coast coming up at the end of August, and in September also in New York City, doing some television, cooking classes, some
that's
radio.
Great.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. So you are unfortunately going to be away from Italy for about a month.
I don't want to go away. I want to stay here.
And I can understand why you should, where we're sitting, everybody. I'm not sure if I explained that correctly, but the smell of the basil in the garden, and we're next to a table with fresh eggplant and tomatoes, and next to the garden, it's just a spectacular view into the valley just by the pool. It's too good to be true. I took some pictures.
You can hear the tractor in the background.
Yeah. it's just one of those things. And so actually, Pamela, not to put you on the spot, if we could talk about the quality of the water here for health reasons and
Oh, we have a special water here.
Yeah.
We really do. We're right next to a town called Chianciano Terme, which is famous for people come from all over the world to drink the water because it's good for curing what ails your liver.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes us happy because we have that water here at our farm, and we can drink as much wine as we want, and then we fix ourselves with the water.
Every day.
Yeah.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, no, it is. It's special. In fact, this was a big hangout of Fellini 50 years ago. He used to come here and do these treatments. And
that's spectacular.
Oh, it's pretty neat. I wanted to show you this.
Please.
In the Italian Food Artisans book, this is a picture of a person who produces, grinds olive oil, makes olive oil, still in the old-fashioned method, using a horse drawing the stone. I mean, we are so, in the rest of our Tuscan reality here, so far away from this. It's all mechanized now. And we don't have this same kind of system, but this guy is still doing it. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And that's the thing that you will find here in Italy, and specifically in Tuscany, is that they truly embrace the artisanship of the olive oil that they make, the wine that they make, the food that they cook and eat. It's just, it's spectacular here. And that's why people always ask me, what's your favorite region, Anthony? It's very difficult to say. However, there's two regions that have a very special place in my heart. Tuscany and Campania. Campania, because my family is from there. But they're just the people
here. Region too.
Yeah, it really is.
But you know, it's interesting how things have changed here in the last 10 years, just in the time that we've lived here. We moved here 10 years ago. And because we produce olive oil too, have gone from seeing this horse-drawn millstone to some very, very modern kind of methods. And we certified organic in 2005. It meant that we couldn't use this system where they stack the olive paste up on mats and press it. But sure. It had to be done in a system that's very closed, very hygienic, and not touching other people's olives. Heaven forbid.
Yes, right?
Who knows what they did before they got to us. But in a way, it's really, really good because it's got a better quality oil to it, I have to say. But
sure.
I'm missing some of these kind of old traditional things.
It's wonderful. And you'll have the ability here, and we'll talk about this further, because Pamela wears many hats, as we mentioned before. Before we get to that, how do people, your website, let's talk about your website, and so people can, maybe when they're listening, go to your website and follow along here.
Okay, yeah. Well, we have two websites, actually. Okay. The first one is about my cookbooks and my culinary workshops in Italy, not just Tuscany, but other regions too, and that is foodartisans.com. FOODARTISANS.com.
Great.
And then, the second website is about our farm. The olive oil we produce, the bed and breakfast that we have here. And
perfect.
That's called Poggio Etrusco, which is Poggio hyphen Etrusco.com.
That's great. Yeah. Which is an excellent segue, actually, to talk about another hat that you wear, which is this wonderful property with your vineyard and your olive orchard in the B&B.
Well, when we moved here in 2001, we ended up buying this property. It was already a working agriturismo. You know, people ask me, did you restore this beautiful farmhouse from the late 1600s? And I say, no, I'm no Frances Mays. But I have to say that. She's a lovely person, and I commend her for all the work she did. But we needed to get in and get working, and we had culinary workshops already coming over. I had been doing that since 92.
And so we just needed
a home base to do it from, and then this has become a fabulous spot. It's very close to a lot of things that you want to see when you tour Southern Tuscany. We can go to Siena. Mm-hmm. We can go to Florence in an hour and a quarter.
Right.
Rome in an hour and a quarter. It's a perfect location for getting out and seeing things. Pienza, Cortona, Montepulciano, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lovely.
That's great. And so let's talk a little bit maybe about some of the cooking classes and the options that people might have to come and learn from a true artisan master.
Oh, you're sweet.
Thank you.
Oh, that's I'm going to have to give him an extra bottle of olive oil for that. Well, what we do is we have the bed and breakfast, which we have rooms, mm-hmm. that just a double room with private bathroom and so on, or apartments that have kitchens and are set up. People can pick from our garden. So people come and stay from two nights. We ask for two-night minimum. They can stay for as long as they want, mm-hmm. and live in the farmhouse, and it's really very comfortable. We have two markets every week that we can go to, and it's a fabulous place to just spend a holiday. We've got swimming pool and all the goodies.
Yeah.
But sometimes people like to do a one-day cooking class with me, and so we'll go do the market together, pick up some things, come back and do typical
sure.
local dishes. And then we also have a program where we have five nights. It's a week-long program. And usually we it's very diverse. It's not just standing around cooking, but it's always about the artisanal foods and wines. And so we go see how pecorino cheese is made. That's great. See how the olive oil is made. We go to winery and understand, you know, what it is about this mm-hmm. zone that's so fabulous for a red wine. Oh. And then we have a couple of special weeks that we do. One is our olive harvest program where people, it's actually hands-on working, picking the olives, tree to table. We do cooking classes too, but everyone's out there every morning picking olives, and they earn olive oil to take home.
Right.
Yeah, and do cooking classes and learn about the process.
Well, I'm lucky. I've got a can to take home right now in front of me. I'm very excited about that, and gracious enough to give me not only the olive oil but a bottle of wine. So I'm very excited
don't,
about
don't
that.
Don't do it all at once.
The wine's not going to make it too long. I'm saving the olive oil to go back to the States for two reasons. One, in the tin that it's in, I can get it over the pond and have it. And then the other thing is I can find, obviously not wine as wonderful as yours, but I can get wine at home. But the olive oil is something that is you just can't get anywhere in the States that's even remotely as good as it is here.
Well, no, I don't think that's really true. Sorry, I know.
No, no, please. I love it. I love it.
I hate to say.
No, this is good. This is good.
But actually, you know, there are some very good importers now who are really trying very hard to bring in good products. Manicaretti, Gustiamo. Oh, I'm not. Am I okay to say?
Of course,
oh,
please.
Okay. Are distributors actually? So it's not really that you can go to their website or anything. But there are markets that are taking their products, the really really high quality artisanal products like
good
this.
Deal.
And so you can find our oil in some places in the States.
Okay, so now that's
we just shipped 6 cases to the pasta shop in Berkeley. California.
Okay, all right. Anyone out in California that's in Berkeley, head up there and get some of this stuff.
There's only 3 bottles left. Just kidding.
Yeah, and the third caller, no.
Oh, no, but I think, you know, we've also got some leads in the East Coast, too, and after this trip, hopefully we'll
wonderful.
Be able to list a few more.
Well, that's really good to know. There are some importers in Chicagoland, and they have some decent olive oils, but nothing to the quality that I've had here. So this is good to know. And one thing I will try to do is find out who these importers are and try to find out where they're placing the products so I can put a little list on the website, howtotouritaly.com, because this is the kind of stuff, everyone, that's something that you'll love to have at home, believe
me. Yeah, you know, and also you just can't bring it all back with you.
Right.
You know, you have to make it work somehow.
That's awesome. And then, and that's cool, too, because when people stay with you, they do have very good access to things that they're going to want to do. So you can rent a car, but you can leave the car at the train station here and take your day trips to what we talked about before, like Siena, Rome, Florence, and elsewhere.
And which is better to do anyway? You don't want to drive in the city.
No.
No.
It really is a pain.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I did a segment. I called it Finding the Batcave, and it's just like trying to navigate around these cities in a car that you've rented in cities you've never been with traffic patterns and driving styles that are so radically different than we have in the U.S.
Yes.
So it's...
You know, a lot of people have been coming lately with GPS, and
yeah.
and unfortunately, GPS only gets you halfway down the hill to us. And so, you know, they call me up, and they're like...
I can't get there.
I don't know where... I don't know where I am. Well, tell me what you see. Just describe to me what you're looking at so I can guide them in, right? They go.
I see a goat.
Exactly. I see cypress trees.
Right.
And there's a vineyard over
there's
there.
There's a valley, but.
Yeah. And let me guess, is there a Tuscan farmhouse there too?
Exactly. Well, we were, we cruised into the, in your van. You kind of showed us the back of the property, which is wonderful because you do have these spectacular olive orchards and the vineyard, and the wonderful B&B here. And not to mention, what's really nice about Pamela is you get, and there's your little puppy.
And there's Louie. Louie says hi.
Louie says hello. Well, the great thing is, you can come and experience how wonderful the property is and enjoy the B&B. Or, when you're, in the U.S., you can buy her cookbooks and cook a little bit, from Pamela's cookbooks because they are spectacular. I own many of them and unfortunately didn't even know.
Oh, well.
And
you're forgiven.
Know. I feel so bad about that.
Yeah.
And then everyone, when you're at Williams-Sonoma, you will see her cookbooks, on the wall. It's definitely something to pick up. It's spectacular. So, I was going to ask one more thing, and that's when you're going to be in the U.S. Maybe you said that already, but when you're going to be in the U.S. for the book tour, when does it start?
I'm going to start in Washington, D.C., the 24th, Virginia, the 24th of August, and work my way up. I'm going up to Boston, Connecticut, New York. So
wonderful.
Throughout the month of September also.
Very, very good. And I will have links on howtotouritaly.com so that you can find out this information. And then Pamela and I are also, we're Twitter friends. So what's your Twitter handle?
Hey, watch what you're saying. Pamela in Tuscany.
Exactly.
Okay. And I'm on Facebook too.
That's right. That's
I am
right.
So like in the 20th century.
It's That's right. Funny. Very multimedia.
1600 farmhouse and a 20th century computer.
That's great. So everyone, just to recap, we're sitting here, of course, with Pamela Sheldon Johns, the cookbook author, the chef, the B&B owner, the olive oil maker, the winemaker, the mother, the wife. Am I missing anything? I don't think I am. Isn't that enough? That is definitely enough. And so thank you so very much for...
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. And I have to actually thank Twitter for putting us together because Twitter was the reason that we got connected.
Isn't that amazing?
Which is great.
I'm very excited about that.
So props to Twitter. And real quick, Twitter went down all day yesterday and I was beside myself. I couldn't believe it. For the first time, I realized how tied to Twitter that I am on a regular basis. So Twitter, don't go down again because you threw me off for a whole day.
Oh, dear.
And with that, thank you so much for hospitality. It's been wonderful getting to know you both, and I look forward to coming back next year
again.
And spending some time.
All right.
Ciao, everybody.
Ciao, ciao.
Dreaming of renting a villa in Italy? Papavero Villa Rentals, your Italy experts, will make that dream come true. We specialize in Italy 100% of the time. It's our passion, and we love what we do. We're experts on travel to Italy, and we're here to help you plan the perfect trip. From the Italian Alps to the beaches of Sicily, we personally select each property to assure your comfort. We travel to Italy multiple times a year to inspect and revisit each property to assure your physical comfort as well. We thump the pillows, check the water pressure, and sleep in the beds. We know each property intimately and are happy to help you choose the one that best suits your desires. And we don't stop there. Our frequent trips to Italy enable us to arrange day tours and services, all pre-approved by us so you can book with confidence. No matter what your dream may be, a stunning villa with staff on Lake Como, a country cottage in Tuscany, a chic apartment in Rome, or anything in between, trust your dream to Papavero Villa Rentals. Call us toll-free at 1-866-737-0000. That's 1-866-737-0000. Or visit us online at papaverorentals.com.